Okay, so I'm going to talk today a little bit about what we've been doing, some work in my lab to try to help our vegetable growers manage Phytophthora blight. So Phytophthora blight is caused by an oomycete pathogen, Phytophthora capsici. It's very problematic because it can spread very rapidly in an infested field. It's often introduced through irrigation or with in flooding, which is a big problem for us in Indiana. And so under ideal environmental conditions, it can result in complete crop loss. And it's particularly hard to manage because it has a very broad host range. It affects cucurbits and solanaceous crops, so crop rotation isn't really an option for trying to manage this, and it also produces resilient spores that can live in soil for up to 10 years. There are isolates that are developing resistance to many of the fungicides that are effective for this, like methanoxam, and it has overcome resistance in genetic resistance in crop cultivars. So we were interested in trying some different biological approaches to try to help manage this particular disease. And we heard a little bit about different biological controls this morning. It can be due to a wide range of mechanisms in soil, from just increasing total competition to antibiosis or even induced systemic resistance. And so we decided to look at, first of all, cover crops, hoping they would have some sort of positive feedback effect on the soil. And we looked at both brassicas, which are pretty well known for their potential to help suppress some soil-borne pathogens. It's often attributed to biofumigation because they have glucosinolate compounds in them, but it's also been attributed to increases in like Streptomyces populations. We also looked at cereal rye, which has shown in some cases to have some potential biocontrol type effects in, for soil-borne pathogens in potato systems, and for our growers in southern Indiana, it's something that they tend to use quite a bit if they're going to use a cover crop. And then lastly, we used wheat, which is a crop that's been shown to suppress soil-borne pathogens in some systems. I did some work in Washington State with Mark Mazzola looking at using wheat to suppress the pathogens responsible for apple replant disease. And so this is often attributed to increases in fluorescent pseudomonad populations. And there is a potential genotype effect with different wheat varieties. So the other thing we decided to look at is compost. So they've been pretty well studied in container-based systems to introduce a disease-suppressive type of effect, and vermicompost is one that's been receiving increasing attention recently, particularly in Eric Nelson's lab at Cornell. He's done some interesting work with Pythium, and we have a pretty large vermicomposting facility in our state, so that's another one that we looked at, a local source of that. And then lastly, biochar, which is receiving increasing attention for its potential as potentially reducing pathogens, and so it's been shown to have effect in at least 6 pathosystems now, and one of my former master's students did some work to show that it might have some effect, certain types of biochar, with reducing Phytophthora capsici infection in pepper. So we did an experiment. We went down to southern Indiana and found 2 fields that were heavily infested with Phytophthora capsici. We collected soil from under the very infected plant material and brought it back to the lab. And these 2 soils, one was a very sandy loam soil with just 1.3% organic matter and a neutral pH. And then the other one was a silt loam that had a much higher organic matter at 4.5. And so we grew these in greenhouses. So we had a control treatment, pasteurized, a biochar at a 3% rate, which is what's generally been shown in the literature to have some sort of disease suppressive effect. And this was a softwoods biochar produced between 450 and 550 degrees centigrade. The vermicompost from a local source, again at a rate that's shown some efficacy in other studies. And a Caliente mustard mix, which is a mix of brassica and Sinapis species. Then we had a cereal rye, and then we grew wheat CV Penawawa, which is the variety that showed the most effect in our previous trials, as well as 2 Indiana varieties that are nice short season crops that might fit in well into a diverse vegetable rotation system in Indiana. And then we grew each of the cover crops and the vermicompost either alone or with biochar. And we grew them for, I think, about a month, cut the biomass, mixed it up in the soil, let the pot sit for a couple weeks to kind of decompose a little bit, and then came in with a susceptible variety of pepper, California Wonder. Let that grow for 4 weeks, and then harvested it, the plant, and the rhizosphere communities. So just some of the results, what we saw that was consistent across both soils is that biochar actually increased weed biomass, but did not have an effect on the cover crop biomass. And we saw very wide differences in biomass between the different cover crops species and varieties, and they were effective at suppressing weeds. Just with some simple plate counts, we looked at trichoderma because it's often implicated in disease suppression, and we didn't see any treatment effect with that. But we did see, like my former student saw in his studies, that pepper root infection in the biochar treatments was reduced for the Phytophthora species. So in terms of what happened unique to each soil, in soil A was just the low organic matter soil. We really didn't see any change in fluorescent Pseudomonad species. But we did see with the vermicompost, Penawawa, Indiana 1131, some reduced Phytophthora soil abundance. And most of these treatments, as you can see on that figure, increased shoot growth, which was positive, but only the vermicompost, Penawawa, pasteurized, and Caliente in 1131N with biochar actually increased root weight in these soils. In soil B, we did see an increase in fluorescent Pseudomonads with our wheat treatments, which is what we would have expected, but we did not actually see a decrease in Phytophthora species, with the exception of the rye treatment, where we saw an increase in Phytophthora soil abundance. And then both the biochar, rye with biochar, and all of the wheat treatments increased root, both shoot and root biomass. And in the case of Penawawa versus Penawawa with biochar, we saw a bigger increase in shoot and root growth, which might indicate some sort of additive or synergistic effect. With that, we decided to focus on the four treatments that were kind of the most interesting, and we wanted to dig a little deeper and see what might be going on in those treatments. So we chose the control, biochar, it's supposed to be Penawawa, and Penawawa with biochar in both soils. So we used 16S Illumina MiSeq data and followed that up with CHIME for analysis. And we saw between the two soils, in terms of the phylums, they look pretty similar in overall abundance of different phylum. But when you look at this principal coordinate analysis here, we can see that with among individual taxa, the two soils did seem to differ from each other quite a bit, as you might expect. In terms of treatment impacts, it depended a little bit on the soil for what we saw in the two systems. In soil A, we kind of got less separation overall. This was the lower organic matter soil. The biochar, which are these red dots, the control is the orange dots, didn't really separate very well at all, but we did get some separation with the Penawawa treatment. And in soil B, we did see a shift from the biochar treatment and to a lesser degree some of the Penawawa. And the Penawawa biochar was often kind of in the middle. And so we didn't see a lot of separation. We did start to see some changes in individual microbial taxa from a result of these different treatments that we applied. And what we found was most interesting is that in these two soils, we found some overlap changes in there. And so we're still trying to sort through all of this data and what it means. But these are some of just the preliminary things we found. So these figures you can see on the right, these are plots showing in the two soils. All of these taxa up here are ones that increased, and on the lower part of the chart are taxa that decreased. And so one of the things that we saw across all of the soils in terms of these treatments is that we saw more reductions in some taxa in the soil A, the lower organic matter soil, and much greater increases in taxa in soil B, the higher organic matter. And so this figure just shows this is the kind of the overlap of, you know, in soil A we saw things change in soil B, but we're kind of focusing right now on this region of overlap in which things changed. And so we saw a huge increase relatively in alpha proteobacteria, some with the Firmicutes, And some of these organisms that we've just been starting to pull out of this are involved in nitrogen cycling, some potentially with phosphorus solubilization, and some which have been implicated perhaps in some disease suppressive activities. So in the Penawawa system, again, we saw something, you know, kind of similar in terms of shifts with more taxa being reduced in soil A and more taxa being increased in soil B, but also, again, some overlap between these two systems. And in this, with the Penawawa, we saw a very large increase in the Firmicutes and some of the beta protobacteria, as well as alpha, delta, and some gamma. So a lot of changes in proteobacteria. And these are some of the organisms that just seem to be changing more significantly in these systems, so upregulation and downregulation perhaps. And then the Penawawa plus biochar, that kind of combined treatment, we saw some kind of effects that looked like they were coming from the different treatments. So we saw, again, an increase in the Firmicutes, which was similar to the Penawawa treatment, so that could have been caused by that. And we also saw a big increase in the alpha proteobacteria, which potentially could be from the biochar-treated soils. And in this system, we saw quite a decrease in some of the beta proteobacteria. So just in conclusion, we think, based on these studies, that there is some potential for wheat cultivation to help reduce Phytophthora blight and increase vegetable crop productivity. So obviously these soils were conducted in greenhouses, not in the field, so we need to take this back out into the field to test, but we think that it could be a really nice strategy for growers to use because they could help diversify their rotations by integrating wheat and not just continually working with vegetables. And so it's possible that there are some microbially mediated suppression going on in these systems. We did see some taxa that increased that have been implicated in other studies looking at disease suppressive soils, but this is just, you know, abundance data, so we can't make any clear conclusions out of that. But one thing I think that's interesting that came out of this is that we don't really see a reduction in root infection with these treatments, but we get really great enhanced growth, so maybe there's some other organisms that are helping the plant to grow, like helping it get phosphorus. In the biochar treatment, we think this also has potential, perhaps the right biochar, not all of the biochars we've been working with seem to have this effect, but some of them might have potential to help growers to deal with this Phytophthora blight. It could be, the interesting thing with this one is that we do see that reduction in root infection, and that's been consistent across many of our studies. So one of the hypotheses about how biochar might be reducing infection in soils is that there's a disruption of microbial signaling, or it could be microbially mediated. So again, some of the taxa that we saw that changed have been cited in other studies as potentially being involved in disease suppression. And lastly, there's just some interesting things with how the two different soils, very different soils, responded to these different practices, from the more reduction in taxa in the low organic matter soil, which could possibly be to just shifting away from oligotrophs that are happier in that lower resource environment, and then also perhaps there's just fewer changes. An increase that we saw in that soil because it had a smaller starting community, so it might take more time to see some of the shifts. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge my collaborators on this project. Dan Eagle is a vegetable pathologist that I work with at Purdue University. Natasha Cerruti is my lab manager and research assistant. Philip San Miguel and Rick Westerman at the Purdue Genomics Facility, who helped us with a lot of the initial quality filtering of our sequencing data, and then Yothi, Clayton, and Kitaki at the Bioinformatics Facility. And I'd just like to thank our funders, the Indiana Vegetable Growers Association, the Showalter Trust, and Purdue Ag Research Programs. So with that, I thank you for your attention, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it was a pretty finely ground char. We did, you know, we were going just with the rhizosphere soil, so it was probably less of an effect or factor in this particular treatment than it might be in others where you're just looking at bulk soil, but we didn't really do a lot to tease that out. So that's a big, potential that could be happening there with the microorganisms perhaps using biochar as a place to live, something like that. But yeah, we didn't test that specifically. Yeah, we saw some effect. It wasn't as significant as the other ones, so we did see some decrease in Phytophthora species abundance, particularly in soil B, and some increased growth. I think it was in soil A when it was with the biochar. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I didn't get the first part of your question. We haven't teased that out of it yet, when you get into the rhizosphere and where you're exactly sampling, so the way we sampled it was like taking the roots and putting them in water, shaking it down and then spinning that down, so it's likely that we were getting both microbes that were living right around the root as well as right on the root. So I think to get at that, you'd have to tease that out a little better. And we did not look at endophytes specifically either. Or no.